I think we're live if you wanted to open us up.
Okay, thank you so much, Representative Long. Welcome to the Joint Committee meeting of the House and Senate, the House Committee on Energy, Finance and Policy, as well as the Senate Energy and Utilities Finance Policy Committee. For the record, it's February 26, 2021 at 3:30 in the afternoon, and we're here today to talk about what's going on in the natural gas industry, the natural gas price spikes, which concern we in Minnesota and frankly, people across this country. We want to try to understand it better, and we've got an array of witnesses that are going to help us do that. And from that, we will have to probably make some decisions about how we carry forward. But they would be my brief introductory remarks, Representative Long. I would certainly turn it over to you for yours.
Thank you so much, Chair Senjum. It's unusual to do joint House and Senate hearings. It's the first one I've been a part of, but this is an unusual issue. And earlier this month, we saw gas prices spike to really extraordinary highs. And we're here to learn what the impact will be for ratepayers across Minnesota, from families to small businesses to our large employers. And we also want to determine, as Senator Senjum noted, what the role for the state should be in helping our utilities manage this challenge, and in particular, protecting the most vulnerable in our state. This is even more true when so many have struggled economically during the pandemic, as we were reminded with the release from MMB today that unemployment is still hitting folks unevenly across the income spectrum, and we still have a number of folks struggling in the economic recovery. So with that, Senator Senjum, would you like to introduce our first guest?
Sure. We'll go right down through the agenda. Our first testifier, informer as it is Grace Arnold, the Commissioner of Department of Commerce. Welcome to the Joint Committee, Ms. Arnold, and Attorney General Keith Ellefson will be on deck. So we look forward to your comments, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Long, Chair Senjum, and committee members. For the record, I'm Grace Arnold. I'm the temporary commissioner for the Department of Commerce. And thank you for asking Commerce to appear before you today to discuss the cold snap that we had recently across the country and then the nationwide increases in natural gas prices. One programming note before I begin, we included a detailed presentation that was given to the Public Utilities Commission by my staff in the materials for this meeting. And for those who would like to get into the weeds of natural gas markets and cost recovery, we're happy to do so, but I'm going to keep my comments higher level today. Before diving into the details of the cold weather events, I'd like to add a little bit of context within Minnesota's energy landscape. While this hearing is focused on natural gas resources, it's important to remember that natural gas is just one of a number of energy resources that Minnesota users use to keep the lights on and keep you warm. The department's energy resources experts can provide any more details if you'd like. As you may have heard in media and other reports, natural gas prices spiked on the spot market between February 5th and 18th to more than 50 times the normal price. And I think, yeah. So this slide shows the spike in context of the 10-year historical average. While most utilities have long-term natural gas contracts in place that guarantee pricing on natural gas to meet some of their demand, they purchase some of the gas on demand in what's called the spot market. The extreme cold across the middle part of the country did two things. One, it increased demand for natural gas across the country so that companies were purchasing more gas to meet demand. And two, it caused extreme price increases in the spot market specifically. So that's beyond the fixed price contracts that most utilities have. As a result, we understand that utility gas purchases were well beyond their forecast in both amount and price per unit. We're here today because we're concerned about how and when these costs will be passed to utility customers, both residential and business. Concerning media stories have begun to emerge of individuals with extremely high utility bills resulting from the events of the past couple weeks. On Tuesday, February 23rd, the Public Utilities Commission convened a hearing to begin to understand the impact of these events on Minnesota's regulated utilities. They'll speak to that later in their presentation, I'm sure. And the good news, which I anticipate you'll hear from Chair Sieben, or Commissioner Sullivan later, is that Minnesotans were able to stay safe and warm in their homes with no known interruptions to natural gas service. This was due in part to the hardening of our infrastructure as a result of the events seen in February of 2019. The slide you see here shows the differences between that event and the recent one. The effects of this recent event were economic, and Minnesotans benefited from the planning and changes that took place as a result of the 2019 event, which had impacts on reliability. In addition, energy efficiency programs like the Conservation Improvement Program and weatherization assistance, which lower overall energy use, enable Minnesotans to be resilient against events such as this, as well as mitigate some of the price impacts. So with that context in mind, today I'll speak to three things: Commerce's role in the PUC proceedings, the impact on utilities beyond the rate-regulated utilities that fall under the authorities of the PUC, and the impact on utility customers, both residential and business, and the ways in which Commerce can help through our federal low-income heating assistance program. As I make my comments today, I'd like to stress that this is a national issue and will likely require a federal solution, though may require local and state intervention as well. You'll hear more about the PUC hearing and their investigation process later, but I'd like to highlight the department's role in that process, and we'll be conducting what's called a prudence review of utility actions. That investigation will look into what the impact of the price spikes were and how to protect consumers from getting hit with high utility bills. The slide you see here shows an example of a cost breakdown in a utility bill. The dark blue and light green wedges are the portions of the bill that would be impacted by the cold weather. The green portion illustrates the demand for natural gas, which would increase in cold weather, while the dark blue reflects the underlying cost of the gas purchased by the utility. My team will be asking questions that relate to that dark blue portion: how the gas was purchased, what was paid for the purchases, and whether there are alternatives to purchasing the gas at these high prices, such as dipping into storage or other means of protecting against such large purchases. Second, I'd like to speak to the impact of these events beyond the rate-regulated utilities under the PUC's jurisdiction. These fall into two buckets: the municipal utilities, which you'll hear from later today as well, and smaller unregulated natural gas utilities. The department has been working with the municipal utilities to understand the financial impact to their utility services and their customers. These utilities have an immediate cash flow challenge to resolve. Based on our conversations to date, and the numbers I'll quote here are very illustrative, so please don't take them too much to heart, a utility that normally saw a natural gas bill equal to something like $1 million a month could be faced with a bill this month of something like $13 million a month. We understand that they may get some flexibility in payment terms from natural gas suppliers, and we've been working through some options to provide flexibilities in financing should that be necessary. We also understand that while not required to do so by law, the municipal utilities plan to spread the increase in costs over time to their customers. It's important to note when saying that, while the immediate cash flow challenges may be solved, the bills don't go away, and there will be impact to both utilities and their customers. The last thing that I'd like to talk through today is the most important piece of this problem, and that's Minnesotans. Residential customers and businesses will experience higher heating costs due to both the cold weather and the spike in natural gas prices. As I mentioned earlier, Commerce administers a program called LIHEAP, which is our energy assistance program. Through that program, Minnesota has already received $106 million from the federal government to help income-qualifying homeowners and renters with heating bills through grant money paid directly to utility companies or heating fuel vendors. For context, in 2020, LIHEAP served nearly 118,000 Minnesota households with grants up to $1,600. These households included just under 57,000 seniors, almost 35,000 young children, more than 57,000 people with disabilities, and roughly 7,500 veterans. Commerce is able to take some action without federal assistance, so we'll be releasing, notifying the public later today that we are taking an immediate action to boost the energy assistance heating crisis benefit from $600 to $1,200 per household, and that will help to respond to potentially significant higher natural gas bills. We also may be able to receive more than $138 million from both the remaining funds that have been allocated to the LIHEAP program under current law and through the proposed American Rescue Plan that Congress is considering right now. With these additional funds, we could serve tens of thousands of additional households and provide supplemental benefits targeted to likely impacted consumers, following LIHEAP's currently federally set eligibility level, which is 50% of the state median income. I do want to flag that LIHEAP's limitations as a federal program include some barriers, such as income documentation. Some individuals, like undocumented immigrants, are ineligible, and there are recipient income limitations. One section of the economy that's not covered by, or utility customers that's not covered by the LIHEAP program are businesses, and those businesses will also face higher bills. We anticipate there may be a need to address these bills and look forward to working with you as we all learn more about what those needs might be for those businesses. So in closing, I'd like to first point out that Minnesotans were able to stay safe and warm in their home cold weather event. I'm sure many of us felt cooped up, but we were there. And Minnesotans, the second thing I'd like to close with is to say that Minnesotans who are struggling to pay their utility bills can reach out to our heating assistance and weatherization programs to take advantage of those. These programs may be a lifeline in these and in future circumstances. I'd also like to emphasize the need for federal assistance as the impacts of these, if the impacts of these natural gas prices are indeed as high as they've been reported. As I stated earlier, this is a national problem that will need a federal solution in addition to any state solution to truly address the economic impacts for Minnesotans and Minnesota businesses. Thank you for your time today.
Senator, I believe you're muted.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Arnold, for those comments, that information. I think we'll wait till the end for questions. Why don't we move now to Attorney General Keith Ellefson. Attorney General, welcome to the committee. You can proceed, and looking at the schedule, Chair Katie Stevens will follow you. So,
well, Senator, thank you very much, and co-chairs Senator Sinjum and Long, definitely appreciate the attention you're giving to this critical issue, and also want to thank all of the senators and representatives who are on this joint committee hearing on natural gas today. I would like to advise the committee that I have two extremely able staff members who are going to help me work through questions if you have them for us. One of them is Ian Dobson, who is the manager of our residential utilities division. I'm going to be making reference to that group. And the other one is Eric Maloney, who is a tremendous and brilliant young lawyer. I'm not trying to flatter them. I mean, they really are that good. And you'll see that if you should direct questions in their way. The ability of Minnesotans to purchase natural gas at affordable prices is fundamental to their ability to afford their lives and live with dignity and respect. Our cold weather state, millions of constituents rely on affordable natural gas to heat their homes and businesses and make sure they have hot water, cook food, and do simple everyday tasks. They've got to be able to afford their bills, given the essential nature of this service of receiving that natural gas. So I want to share your concern with the recent reports about skyrocketing prices that have impacted natural gas markets in the last week. And while there is never a good time to have a shock to commodity price increases like this, I think it's difficult to think of a worse time than now when so many people are already struggling with the economic health impacts of the COVID pandemic. My goal today is to talk about what the Attorney General's office can do to help mitigate the harm to Minnesota consumers. And let me first of all talk about the residential utility unit of the Minnesota Attorney General's office. Now, the first area we can help in is through our residential utilities division. I may use the term RUD, I mean the Residential Utilities Division. It represents the interests of residential and small business utility customers in complex and changing electric, natural gas, and telecommunications industries, particularly regarding utility rates, reliability of service, and service quality issues. I ask them to help Minnesotans afford their lives and get quality service to every Minnesotan. The RUD's work supports Minnesota's economy and its residents' quality of life by making sure that the utility rates are reasonable, their expenses are prudent, and that the customers receive high-quality service. This is essential to ensuring Minnesota's citizens and residents and small businesses are not overburdened by excessive costs, poor quality, or poor reliability for necessary services. The Residential Utilities Group represents the Attorney General's Office in front of the Public Utilities Commission, and we're grateful for the commission and our representation in front of that important body. This work is directly authorized by Minnesota Statute 8.33. Those of you who may not know, Chapter 8 of Minnesota Statutes is the chapter that governs the Attorney General's Office. And 8.33 says the Attorney General is responsible for representing and furthering the interests of residential and small business utility consumers through participation in matters before the Public Utilities Commission involving utility rates and adequacy of utility services to residential or small business utility consumers. The statute also gives my office the right to intervene in civil matters in state court and in federal proceedings. It is the Attorney General's Office through the RUD division that stands in the breach on behalf of Minnesotans trying to afford their utility bills. For our purposes here today, this means that we advocate for the interests of residential and small business utility companies when the PUC makes important decisions that affect people's ability to afford their lives. As you can imagine, this can require a lot of complex legal, economic, and financial analysis. We have a staff that does this work. We're proud of the work we do, and we have a relatively small but very talented and highly motivated group. When it comes to these dramatic challenges that we're talking about now with regard to natural gas prices, you know, this division of my office has already begun diving in. We've been meeting last week and this week to think about what we can do. We're still in the early stages of our analysis, but I can share for now that I'm encouraged that at least with respect to the investor-owned utilities, we do not appear to be facing extreme situation as what people have experienced in Texas. Not for now. We've all heard there were reports of people receiving bills of thousands or even tens of thousands of dollars higher than normal. Although we aren't experiencing these increases of magnitude here, there is still potential of significant increases in residential utility ratepayers and small business consumers. We're thinking about what we can do and what can be done to minimize and mitigate that kind of harm to Minnesotans. We're on it. We're working on it. It is receiving our full attention. My office's RUD division will be working alongside the Public Utilities Commission and the Department of Commerce to look at how we can use the regulatory process to limit the harm to our communities from natural gas price increases. And let me be clear, my office's authority in advocating for residential and small business utility customers covers only those people who are served by utilities regulated by the PUC. That generally does not include municipal utilities. That said, I can assure you that we're looking for every means in our power to protect all residential and business rate and small business ratepayers. The second thing we can do, we can use our RUD group to protect consumers. The second thing is we can engage around the area of price gouging. You know, we can review price spikes to determine if there's evidence that prices are exceeding the allowable amount under the executive order. you may have been, you may be surprised to learn that Minnesota is the only, is only one of 14 states, is only one of 14 states that does not have a comprehensive anti-price gouging law. 35 other states have them, including the District of Columbia. I urge that we pass one. In fact, hopefully the legislature will take action on Representative Stevenson's bill, HF 844, which would prohibit price gouging on essential goods and services during emergencies. I testified in favor of that this morning. We do, however, have an executive order, as I already mentioned, Executive Order 2010, that prohibits price gouging on essential goods and services during the duration of the COVID-19 peacetime emergency. This executive order is enforced by another division of my office, and that is the Consumer Wage and Antitrust Division. So now I can't disclose whether we currently have an investigation of these events. If we did, that if we did, what the evidence might entail. It is our procedure to keep our investigations in-house until we're ready to announce otherwise. But I can assure you of this. We're not going to allow Minnesota consumers to be taken advantage of. I want you to know that. We're considering every option available. And you can trust that we mean when we say we are here to help Minnesotans afford their lives. And that's regarding utility prices as well. Now, the third thing I want to tell you that we can do is, I'll just say the first one is through our RUD division. The second one is through our executive order authority and price gouging. The third one is under another provision of the statute under Chapter 8, and that is 8.31. This third area where the Attorney General's office can help is through our Consumer Protection Authority, what's known as Parents Patriae Authority. There are 43 attorney generals who are elected, 48 that serve at the pleasure of the people. And under that authority, which is historic and rooted in common law, we are positioned to stand up for consumers, stand up for people when they really need it. The section 8.31 states that the Attorney General shall investigate and prosecute violations of the law of this state respecting unfair, discriminatory, and other unlawful practices in business, commerce, or trade. That's pretty broad authority, and we'll use it when we see consumers being subjected to unfair, discriminatory, or other unlawful practices in business, commerce, or trade. Again, it's simply not the practice of this office to disclose the pre-settlement or litigation investigation that we're doing. But again, I want to assure you that that tool in our toolbox is one we can and will use to protect Minnesota consumers. So let me just wrap up. In short, I want to assure you that my office will do whatever we can to limit any harm from these exorbitant prices that have come on so suddenly. We are investigating. Can't really tell you who now. That would not be fair in case the investigation shows that there's not culpability. But we are investigating. We are looking into this matter, and we want to assure you of that. And so I'd like to end with some commendations. I want to commend the Public Utilities Commission and the Department of Commerce for the leadership they showed quickly prioritizing this issue. I want to commend Senator Tina Smith, who has shown great leadership at this time by making sure that our federal authorities are prioritizing this issue. She and I have been on the phone. She's doing a great job. She's showing leadership. And I want to commend the members of this body, the co-chair and members, and I commend you for your efforts prioritizing this important, urgent issue. Simply by having this hearing, you are demonstrating to Minnesotans that you care and that you're willing to act. And I am very pleased to see that. And as I said before, Assistant Attorney General Ian Dobson, who manages our RUD group, and Assistant Attorney General Jason Plagenkuhl, who manages our Consumer and Wage and Antitrust group, and also Assistant Attorney General Eric Maloney are here and they can answer any questions that you have. Thank you for your time.
Senator, I believe you need to turn on your mic.
I need to practice that. Thank you, Attorney General Ellison. We appreciate you being here today and for your testimony and for your great interest in this. It's clearly appreciated by all of us, and we want you to know that. So moving on now to the Public Utilities Commission, which has had a hearing on this. We welcome Chair Katie Sieben. Welcome to the Joint Committee, Commissioner Siebens, and we look forward to your comments. So proceed as you're ready.
Members, good afternoon. Thank you to Chair Senjum and Long for pulling this meeting together today on short notice to discuss the economic impact on the natural gas price spike on Minnesotans. My name is Katie Sieben, and joining me today is Joe Sullivan, who's the vice chair of the Public Utilities Commission, and Bob Harding, who is the commission supervisor of the Financial Analysis Division. For those of you who aren't familiar with the commission, we're a five-member appointed board that regulates five investor-owned gas utilities in the state. We regulate to ensure Minnesotans have access to reliable, affordable heat and electricity. On Tuesday of this week, we launched an investigation into this matter, and you've heard what you've heard of, that you've heard on this matter that includes the four largest investor-owned gas utilities. Today, Commissioner Sullivan and I will cover what we learned and where our investigation is headed, and Bob Harding is on the call to answer questions. Before I go much further, I'd like to thank the governor, the Department of Commerce, and Attorney General for their leadership these past days, as well as Senator Tina Smith for her quick action and call for a federal investigation into the matter. While we are an independent agency, we understand that it will require cooperation with you as legislators and across state and federal agencies to coordinate a response to assist Minnesota customers and businesses. The first point I'd like to make is that, and Bob, you can go to the next slide, please. The first point I'd like to make is that for our rate-regulated customers in Minnesota, we anticipate that the gas spike from last week will lead to a surcharge on Minnesotans' bills. About 90% of Minnesotans heat their homes with natural gas, and the average year-round monthly bill is about $57, certainly higher in the winter. Now, as a result of this price spike, layer on top of that an average monthly one-time increase in cost from this event in the range of $200 to $400 on residential customers. We don't know yet the impact on businesses or industrial customers, as Commissioner Arnold said. Again, though, a one-time price spike of about $300 per household simply from the price spike in the national natural gas spot market. The commission opened an investigation this week, which will delve into questions specific to the four rate-regulated utilities you see up on the slide there: CenterPoint, Xcel, Great Plains, and Merck. And it covers approximately 1.6 million customers. And that definition of customers there is more like accounts. So the commission opened an investigation, and there are specific reforms that the commission will consider on a going forward basis to consider whether this could be prevented in the future and the impact that this will have on rates. And then what are mitigation factors that can potentially minimize the pain of that average $400 residential impact. Without going too far into the details here, factors like the amount of gas in storage, the magnitude of hedging as a tool to minimize exposure to the spot market, and customer communications and alerts will be examined in the investigation. As the slide indicates, we will also look for advice from consumer and low-income advocates for ways to minimize the impacts on low-income Minnesotans. As a regulator, we likely have tools available to help smooth the impact. For instance, spreading the amount over many months, starting in September. The department, as we heard, will carefully consider the prudency of gas purchases. However, Commissioner Sullivan and I are here today to state that despite the regulatory tools available, financial assistance will be needed to help dig out of this deep hole that, quite honestly, is a nationwide problem brought on by the Arctic air that covered most of the United States over the President's Day weekend. An important point I would like to also make is that the reliability of Minnesota's gas system was strong throughout last week's cold weather, despite the severe strain on the power grid and demands on natural gas. People stayed warm in Minnesota, despite it being 20 below zero in some places. I thank again our frontline workers who braved these extreme temperatures to help ensure Minnesotans had heat. Our infrastructure in Minnesota was built to ensure the system would function in the extreme cold. So despite it being 40 degrees colder than it was in Texas, for example, over the same weekend, Minnesotans had heat. We collectively as ratepayers in Minnesota each contribute to ensuring the reliability of the natural gas utility system. This system, however, takes continual investment to ensure the reliability of it in times of need. In 2019, following the last polar vortex, the commission investigated the reliability of parts of the natural gas system where people's pipes froze and heat was not delivered, like in the Princeton and Hugo, Minnesota areas. Underinvestment in infrastructure in that instance, left some Minnesotans without reliable service. And the subsequent investigation led the commission to ordering gas companies to harden or improve their delivery system to fix these problems. And as a result, again, throughout this cold weather, residents did not see similar service disruptions. We know that choices other regions of the country can make impact Minnesota utility customers. Usually, oversight of prudent investments results in reliable, resilient infrastructure that can meet the needs of Minnesotans in extreme periods of weather at affordable rates. But as extreme weather hits more often, or in this case, impacts many parts of the country at once, it led to outrageously high market prices for natural gas. Our gas utilities bought gas to meet the needs of Minnesota customers to heat their homes. But the economic fallout of that severe weather means that instead of further investments in infrastructure that would help buffer Minnesotans from future storms, ratepayers will likely need to swallow a bitter pill. They will have to pay hundreds of dollars more to pay a gas surcharge that was brought on through no fault of their own. Now I'll turn it over to Commissioner Sullivan, who will talk more about the specifics we learned as we launched our investigation on Tuesday. Commissioner Sullivan.
Thank you, Chair Sieben, and thank you, Chair Senjum and Long, and to the House and Senate Energy Committee for having us here today to speak about the recent natural gas spike. As Chair Sieben indicated, my plan is to go a little bit deeper, a little bit more specific, and give the committee some background on how this works a little bit, and then also some of the specific impacts that we're concerned about. But first, so that the committee understands, if the commission does nothing, the impact of the gas spike will be delayed until later this year for the gas utilities that the commission regulates. The reason for this is because of how spot market gas prices get passed on to public utility customers. The gas price spike affects a component of gas costs that we all refer to as the commodity cost of gas. prices are charged to customers within the commodity cost of gas. They're a mix of prices that are set at the beginning of each month that are then supplemented by spot market purchases throughout the month. Now, spot market prices above and beyond or lower than what was estimated, they get trued up later in the year in September. The true-up amount then gets either surcharged or rebated to Minnesota gas ratepayers over the following and ensuing 12 months. So the gas costs incurred by the utilities over the President's Day weekend were spot market purchases. And this means that they will get trued up in September and then spread out to customers between September 2021 and August 2022. And as Chair Sieben indicated before, there's about 1.6 million Minnesota customers that are served by utilities that are covered by this true-up mechanism. So the upshot is the commission and the department have some time to investigate what happened, to review the purchases for prudency, and to look at tools and policies that can be helpful in the future. But that said, there will likely be a very serious impact from this event. And as you can see in slide 3 of the PUC slide deck, the residential impact will be significant. Now, these numbers are preliminary numbers that come from what the utilities told us at the PUC meeting this past Tuesday. They're not final numbers, and they have not been reviewed for prudency, which is important for you to understand. But that said, CenterPoint indicated that the impact to an average residential bill could be as high as $300 to $400. Excel indicated that they were looking at potentially a $250 annual impact on residential bills. Merck and Great Plains, the other two of the utilities involved, had slightly smaller size impacts, but also significant. There's a couple things here that I think are important. This is the average residential bill impact. There will be many Minnesotans who have much larger impacts. Also, there will be significant bill impacts on commercial and industrial customers that are not included in these numbers. And on this point, what we know is that on Thursday morning, CenterPoint on an investor call said that the total impact for the Minnesota jurisdiction could be as high as $500 million. So this chart before you is just residential, and you can see the total impact for residential ranges from $240 million to $325 million. That's how we backed into those numbers using the averages that they gave us. So to put this number into context, and I think this is really important for the committees to understand, the commission approved the settlement of CenterPoint's most recent rate case last month. It was an approximately a $43 million rate increase, which is about a 4% increase in rates. If the $500 million number is accurate, this could be almost 12 times larger than their most recent rate case. So it's very significant. And lastly, unless the commission changes how a gas spike surcharge is recovered, the bulk of these costs will be recovered when people are using the most gas, which will be next winter. So I want to leave you with this. First, infrastructure investments have made the Minnesota system resilient from a reliability perspective. We've done this in Minnesota, and this will continue to be the priority. From an economic resiliency perspective, Minnesota's conservation improvement program and demand-side management framework undoubtedly reduced Minnesotans' bills last week. Demand for gas would have been much higher last week, but for Minnesota's energy efficiency resources. But nevertheless, we are going to be affected by the unprecedented nationwide spike in natural gas prices. The impacts will be severe, and all ratepayers will be impacted. It is this commissioner's view that the legislature can lessen these impacts and should consider direct ratepayer relief. Otherwise, the best that we can do to mitigate the consequences will be to create long-term surcharges and to prospectively ensure our utilities have sufficient reserve margins and are adequately hedged. But those also have their own costs. So with that, I would be happy to turn it back and answer any questions when the committee is ready. Thank you. Sure.
Thank you both to Commissioner Sieben and certainly Commissioner Sullivan. Thank you for your testimony. Is Mr. Hardin, is he going to testify today or is he here as a resource?
Senator Senjum, Mr. Harding's here as a resource.
Okay. That determined, I'm going to turn the moderator task over now to Representative Long. Representative Long, carry forward and take us through to the end.
Thank you so much, Chair Senjum. So we're going to be hearing from two utilities and from our utility, one of our utility associations. And first, we'll have Kent Sulem with the Municipal Utility Association. Mr. Sulem, welcome to our joint hearing.
Chair Long, Chair Senjum, thank you for the invitation to present today. I'm Kent Sulem, Government Relations Director for MMUA. I'm joined by Jack Hagel, our Chief Executive Officer, and Jack will be the one that walks through the bulk of the materials. Just to give you a quick overview of how things are structured in the municipal rate, we have 33 municipal gas utilities in Minnesota. Duluth is by far the largest. They serve 29,000 customers. But then from there, it goes to cities like Owatonna, Austin, New Ulm, Hutchinson, Hibbing, Perham, Circle Pines of Virginia, and some very small ones scattered around the state that you'll hear the impact about shortly. Two-thirds of the municipal gas system is served by communities that have fewer than 1,000 customers. So these are folks that don't have a lot of meters to spread the excess costs around. With that, I am going to turn it over to Jack, who will walk you through the specific impacts that we have seen.
Chairs and members of the committees, thank you very much for having us here. My name is Jack Kegel, K-E-G-E-L, and I'm the CEO of MMUA. We'll try to give you what we know about the impact of the gas price surge on our members. Information is still coming in. Some of the smaller utilities rely on brokers for gas purchasing, and they're getting ballpark figures, but they won't really know the full cost impact until they receive their bills in March. In terms of what we're seeing, it appears to us that the greatest cost impact is going to be to systems that are on the Northern Natural Pipeline. I think the reason for that is the Northern Natural Pipeline originates in the southern part of the United States, where two things happen simultaneously during the cold weather. First, there were some wells that froze off, wellheads that froze, so there was a reduction in supply. And the folks down in the southern part of the United States were experiencing weather they don't normally experience, and they were ordering gas in quantities that they just never order this time of year. So we had some loss of supply and a great increase in demand on that pipeline. Our preliminary information so far is that our systems on the Viking and Great Lakes pipelines, which originate in Canada, will have more modest impact. For a Canadian pipeline, this was basically a cold weather event. There was some increase in demand, which raised prices to some degree, but it looks to us as though the price impacts there will be much smaller than for folks on the Northern Pipeline. Talk a little bit about hedging. Most municipal utilities had a majority of their normal winter volumes at a fixed price. The other term for that is hedged. But they had to buy additional volumes to meet the increased cold weather demand, and those volumes were what came at greatly increased spot prices. Just as an example, one of our member utilities had 70% of its normal winter volumes hedged on fixed price deals. And that's a pretty typical arrangement for winter months. But because they had to buy a lot of additional gas to meet the demand for the unusually cold weather, they wound up only 40% hedged with 60% of their gas exposed to market prices during the cold snap. Most of our municipal gas utilities did give notice to their customers to conserve energy use. They did see a result from that, typically reducing demand by a few percent on the system. And at the prices they were paying, a few percent reduction in demand was very significant. Some of our systems had commercial and industrial customers voluntarily decide to shut down. Most of our systems have interruptible customers who have propane tanks on site, and they can switch from natural gas to propane when requested to do so. So they all switched. That saved them money as well as saving the utility money. There were some other factors that helped a little bit. Some businesses were closed for the weekend, so they weren't using much during part of the cold snap. And the pandemic in some places has lowered commercial industrial volume demand significantly. There's a pretty wide range of fiscal impact. We had some utilities, these were on the northern system, that basically had spent their entire gas purchasing budget for the year by the time the polar vortex event had passed. For some, either they were on a different pipeline or in some cases they had just made some decisions that were very lucky. They'll have a more modest impact. Our estimates at this point is that residential impacts will range from $250 to $500 for a typical residence. Obviously, a much larger residence or a higher user would have a larger impact. And the $500 figure was actually just one utility that was dealing with the same things everybody else was, but they had another problem as well. They had a significant quantity of fixed price gas that they had ordered that they lost to a force majeure event. So in addition to buying a lot of spot gas, they were replacing $3 fixed price gas with $180 spot price gas. So they got hit a little harder than most others. The timing in terms of how municipals will begin recovering the cost of the event is different than for the investor-owns. Municipals don't have the September annual true-up, so they'll begin partial recovery of the price spike costs in the coming months. No one plans to try to collect everything at one time. They all know that they need to be able to spread it out. As far as we know, we don't have anyone that's going to be unable to pay the utility bill in March. In some cases, some of our folks have asked if they can spread the payment out a little bit. For example, one utility mentioned that they have some investments that are callable in about 2 months, so they asked if they could defray part of their payment until those investments are callable. We don't have answers for that yet, but the suppliers thus far anyway have been willing to talk to people about making arrangements that everybody can live with. as far as we know, everyone we've talked to thinks that they can cover the cost with existing reserves or potentially some assistance from city reserves. The downside of this, of course, is that it leaves them very vulnerable for any future event similar to this. They will have to pass some amount of the total on to consumers in order to rebuild the reserves. Most municipals are thinking at this point about spreading costs over the next 9 to 12 months. We have had some indicate that they would like to be able to spread the costs over a longer term. So a lot of these decisions are still under consideration. In terms of what we do, I was very interested in the Attorney General's comments. This is a first event of this kind, so our systems weren't really very well designed to protect against it. But at this point, we understand that the FERC is going to institute an investigation, which we think needs to happen. In our view, like the stock markets, gas markets need a mechanism to put a brake on runaway prices. And we hope that something like that can come out of this. Finally, there have been some questions about the impact on municipal electric utilities in addition to the gas systems. And the impact was pretty modest. Municipal electric utilities on the Western Area Power Administration experienced some service interruptions over a two-day period, basically rolling blackouts on that transmission system. But they were manageable, and they only lasted for a couple of days. At this point, I'll turn it back to Kent, and he will take us home on the presentation.
Jack, just very quickly, we wanted to outline where we're at in terms of for utilities that would prefer not to spend down every nickel of their reserves, that would like to have something left around. How else could they finance this situation? Chapter 475 gives them the authority to issue emergency certificates of indebtedness. The problem with this approach is that there's a fair amount of paperwork involved to get it going, and they would be paid back over a three-year term. Usually these would be handled by a local bank, but given the potential size of some of these requests, it could be, $1 million, it could be $10 million if they're going to borrow for the entire amount. It gets complicated in terms of trying to get, will the banks be able to handle that much at one time when there's multiple customers coming in? And can they turn it around fast enough to meet the March bill deadlines that our folks might be facing? The only other option we'd have would be to try to set up some sort of state emergency loan program. And Chair Long, Chair Senjum, you've both reached out to us to have some very preliminary conversations of what that might look like and would it be possible. We're grateful that the size of that pot would have to probably be much smaller than we originally anticipated, but it is still a conversation we'd like to have. And of course, we've been working with the Department of Commerce, our friends in the Energy Division. Governor's office has been very good about sending a point person to work with us, and they're working also with DEED and MMB to find out how a state program might be structured, how fast could we get it going, and would it be in time to save having to start putting payback amounts onto the bills as early as late March or April. So that concludes our presentation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Sulem and Mr. Cagle. Next, we are going to be hearing from CenterPoint Energy, and we will hear from Brad Tutungian. Mr. Tutungian, welcome to the joint hearing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Chair Long and Chair Senjum and committee members. I am Brad Tutungian. I'm the Vice President of Minnesota Operations at CenterPoint Energy, and I'd like to take a moment to provide a high-level overview of how the natural gas market intersects with our commitment to serve our customers and the need to purchase natural gas to meet their needs. To describe the unprecedented market situation that occurred earlier this month, and to let you know that we fully expect, support, and encourage an in-depth review of what happened in the natural gas market. Clearly, we do not want what happened earlier this month to ever occur again. And we are very open to finding solutions to protect our customers from disruptions in gas supply and pricing in the natural gas market. CenterPoint Energy is a regulated utility that delivers natural gas service to over 870,000 Minnesota residential and business customers. And as a utility, we have a commitment to serve our customers and a need to purchase gas for them in order to meet those needs. That commitment is especially important during extended period of extreme cold weather like we just had here in Minnesota, but simply, our customers count on us to help them stay safe, warm, and to keep businesses running. Fortunately, during that four-day period when temperatures never rose above zero, we kept our gas flowing to our customers when they needed it most. We were able to keep them safe, warm. We kept businesses running, including those that were using it to generate electricity. We had no reliability issues. We had no system outages, despite the extreme cold weather and the volatility of the gas market. Looking at the slide that we have here, at the beginning of the supply chain, we have what is the production, processing, and storing of natural gas, what we call upstream. On the other end of the supply chain is the natural gas utility company like CenterPoint Energy. In between the two is what we refer to as the market. That's where the utility goes to purchase natural gas to deliver it to the end-use customer. And it's here I'd like to make a couple points about that specifically. First, the cost of the natural gas that is purchased is a direct pass-through to the customer. There is absolutely no markup, and there is what the customer pays is exactly what we pay for the price of natural gas. We are not in the business of selling natural gas. We simply deliver it. In other words, we build, operate, and maintain a natural gas distribution system. Secondly, we utilize a diverse portfolio of supply sources, such as on-system supply and natural gas storage. And they each can come with their own special pricing structures that can include things such as winter pricing, monthly pricing, summer pricing, hedged pricing, et cetera. I did want to note that we do buy a substantial amount of our natural gas in advance. So the majority of the gas that we do purchase is bought in advance during the off season. But we still have to buy short-term and even daily basis gas to meet our customer needs, especially when there's extreme cold and heating demand expected, just like that was explained earlier in the previous presentations. So it's absolutely essential that we use these tools to purchase sufficient natural gas to ensure safe, reliable supply under a wide variety of conditions. Because if we don't, that can result in penalties that are far more extreme than what we just observed in the market. Next slide, please. This slide shows the unprecedented challenge caused by the extreme cold weather that affected large parts of the country. On Monday, February 15th, more than one-third of the continental United States was below zero, and nearly 80% of the country had temperatures below freezing. As shown in this map, the Arctic cold temperatures continued the following day, affecting nearly every state from Minnesota to Texas to Colorado to Maine. The widespread nature of extreme weather resulted in unprecedented demand for natural gas heating. At the same time, because of the extreme weather, there was a dramatic drop-off in the availability of supply gas. As you can see on the chart on the right, U.S. gas production declined sharply due to a freeze-off that severely limited the ability to get gas to the ground and out of the ground and into the market. And so when we refer to that freezing, typically methane on its own, it's not going to freeze in these temperatures. But through the extraction process, the impurities that are found in that well gas can have carbon dioxide, nitrogen, as well as water vapor and oil, thus causing those wells to freeze and thus stopping production. And because of that, the U.S. experienced the largest weekly decline in natural gas output since Hurricane Ike in September 2008. So you combine a record high demand of natural gas needs with a dramatic drop off in supply, which created a recipe of a dangerous recipe of rising gas prices. For quite a while, typically natural gas prices have been stable around $3 per million BTU. But on Friday, February 12th, market prices ran up to over $100, and in some places in the country, even higher than that. And they remained there for about 4 to 5 days. In order to meet our obligations to serve our customers' heating needs, we, like many utilities across the country, were required to purchase quantities of natural gas supply through the spot market at elevated prices. While the exact impact of these prices, as discussed earlier, are still to be determined, we do know, as Commissioner Sullivan explained, they are going to be significant. And we believe that the existing rate recovery mechanisms may be inadequate to address this situation. So we look forward to working with the Public Utility Commission to address those concerns. We would like to work with them on whatever recovery process that we could do to help mitigate the potential rate impacts that would flow directly to our customers. We welcome the Commission's formal investigation into the price spike, as well as any other investigations at the state and federal levels. It's critical to get a full accounting of what happened, including any price gouging or market manipulation. And finally, I'd like to conclude with a reminder that in cold weather states like ours, natural gas remains an indispensable energy resource. But the fact also remains that we do not produce any natural gas of our own in Minnesota. We have to buy it and import it from other places. The dependency for non-Minnesota gas was ever so clear during this crisis and emphasized the need for our industry to evolve and consider opportunities to diversify our gas fuel portfolio even more than we do now. There is an emerging opportunity to develop our own made in Minnesota clean energy resources such as renewable natural gas and renewable hydrogen that can substitute for conventional natural gas and are not directly dependent on the volatile gas market. At CenterPoint Energy, we are actively pursuing these opportunities, and the Natural Gas Innovation Act, currently pending in the legislature, would help advance development of these new Minnesota made energy resources. So as we look back at what just took place in the natural gas market, we should also continue to look ahead and support innovative opportunities that can help Minnesota reliably meet our energy needs in future years. So that I'd like to say thank you and return it back to Chair Long and Chair Sengen.
Thank you, Mr. Tutungjian. And our final speaker before we go to member questions will be Chris Clark, president of Xcel Energy in Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Mr. Clark, welcome to our joint hearing.
Thank you, Chair Long. Thank you, Chair Sengen. Thank you, members of both committees, for the opportunity to speak today. You've heard a lot of information already, so I'll try to keep my comments brief so that you'll have an opportunity to ask questions. But let me just say that with me is Amy Lieberkowski, our Director of Regulatory Pricing and Analysis, who will also be able to help answer any questions that the committee may have. Of course, our top priority during this extreme weather, as always, was ensuring that our customers had reliable access to heat and electricity so they could remain safe. And of course, we're pleased that we were able to continue to provide that service to our customers through this extreme weather event. As Brad just noted, you can see the significant cold weather event had a dramatic impact on not only parts of the country that don't typically experience that, but had a lot of physical impact on the natural gas production to pipeline systems. I think the good news for this legislative committee is that we in the industry have been actively working with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, and I'm appreciative of the quick action that they took to bring us in and begin gathering information so that we can best understand what happened, we can best understand what worked well on our systems. And like in the polar vortex, when the commission also brought us together and helped review what happened, we made decisions about important infrastructure investments going forward that positioned us well for this extreme weather event. So I look forward to working with the commission, the Attorney General's office, and the Department of Commerce as we explore ways to both mitigate the costs for our customers and also that we explore opportunities to understand how to be best positioned to be even more resilient, both on an economic and a physical operations basis going forward. I also agree that Senator Smith's letter to federal agencies has been helpful. The initiation of a FERC investigation, we think, will be helpful to understanding what happened in the markets and, as MMUA suggested, what sort of measures might be helpful in the future as we look to make sure that these types of events can never happen again. We have also had the opportunity to work with the Commission, the Department, and the Office of Attorney General on the response to COVID-19. And we certainly are aware that the impact of COVID-19 has been significant on both our residential customers and our business customers. And I'm pleased to say that we've been able to put a lot of programs in place to try to be helpful to those customers, including those who are most vulnerable. And I think as we review and learn lessons from this, recognizing that we continue to operate through a pandemic, we'll want to be thoughtful about how we can best mitigate the impacts of this situation, but also be thoughtful about the other challenges that COVID-19 is bringing us. So I think we have a lot of work to do ahead of us. As I said, it's always important that we look not only at what happened here in Minnesota, but we look across the country at what happened physically on the systems and explore opportunities, not only for us to be more resilient, but also to take lessons learned that we can apply on both the gas and the electric system. In Minnesota, we've made wise investments in our infrastructure, and that's been encouraged by our commission and by this legislature. So I think we can be appreciative that we were able to continue to serve customers in a weather event that turned out to be more extreme and deeper. And I mean deeper by both particularly the way the cold air moved down through the center of the country and really had much greater impact on places that obviously aren't as well winterized as we are here. So I do think there are important lessons to be learned across the industry, and we look forward to doing our part to be helpful to that. I think I will just say one final thing and then look forward to having a dialogue with this committee. I do think that the commission and the Department Office of Attorney General are well positioned to help us through this. We'll certainly look forward to working with them and other stakeholders about opportunities at the legislature and at the federal level to bring more support to bear to help our customers. And finally, I want to thank our crews who worked through the extreme weather event, braving the cold and keeping the system working. So I want to just acknowledge the hard work of our gas operations, our electric operations, and our IBEW members who keep the system running well so that we can all stay warm and comfortable. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I look forward to a dialogue both today and in the future.
Thank you so much, Mr. Clark. We'll go now to member questions, and I have two to kick us off. The first is for Chair Sieben. If we're looking at some of the costs that were shared with the Public Utilities Commission earlier this week, even if some those costs are spread out over a year in the fuel clause, it would be $30 a month for some of our average homeowners. And so I'm curious, what would the cost be to help protect some of our most low-income Minnesotans from a price shock from the high gas prices, if we have any way to estimate that?
Thank you for the question, Chair Long. First, I'll note that the overall impact of what we heard from, again, the four rate-regulated natural gas utilities is approximately, is between $400 and $485 million just for residential customers. And so the magnitude of this impact is something that I know has been discussed today, but is really significant. And so any support that the legislature or our federal partners can provide for direct rate relief for utility customers would be appreciated. If you looked at that total bill of helping residential customers and say perhaps you wanted to help the lowest quintile of Minnesotans, that would be back of the envelope calculation of about $96 or $97 million, if that helps give a sense of the magnitude. I think the other important thing to say is through our investigation, we will look for input from low-income advocates and certainly the utilities, as Mr. Clark indicated. They will bring forward proposals to the commission about how to help mitigate impacts to low-income customers. But unless we get additional state or federal support, people are going to see significant hits to their utility bills.
Thank you, Chair Sieben. My second and final question is for Mr. Sulem. It looks like the impacts that you're showing are between $250 and $500 per customer, which if you spread that out over a year is $40 a month at the high end for $500. And you mentioned that there was interest on the from a number of municipal utilities and having some additional flexibility for stretching out the ability to have some of those payments be made by your customers. When would the legislature need to act if we were to provide some emergency loan assistance like you described?
Thank you, Chair Long, for the question. When we originally started looking, we were thinking it was going to have to be by the very first part of March, around March 10th, because they have 10 days normally to pay the bill from their supplier. It now looks like we'll have a little bit more breathing room, but Jack, would you say that mid-April would probably be the latest we dare go?
I would think so. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Sulem. Senator Senchum, did you have a question before we turn to others?
Yes, Representative Long. I'm trying to, and this would be for anyone, I'm trying to put myself in the position of a homeowner in Minnesota who is going to get caught off guard with this. And I'm just thinking that a lot of homeowners think that when they're on a natural gas system, or for that matter, electrical system, water system, whatever it might be, that their rates are fixed and constant. And that if the cost of whatever the product is, in this case, natural gas, goes up, that the natural gas company needs to eat that cost. Apparently, that's not the way it is in Minnesota. I personally believe a lot of people might think it is, because that's the way we've lived all our lives. We believe that the rate of natural gas is pretty constant. If you turn their thermostat up, you save money. If you you cost more money. If you turn it down, you save some money. But I guess it's a basic question. The natural gas rates aren't fixed, so to speak, or periodically adjusted, et cetera, et cetera. So a resident, a homeowner, a customer is subject to these spikes, which don't occur often, but have now. Is it true that those rates are not fixed? For anybody.
Chair Senjum.
Yeah.
This is Commissioner Sulem. I can you know, take a stab at that. And then if other people want to fill in, that's fine. We pay a blended cost for gas. There's two main components of that cost. One of those is, what I had referred to before, which is the commodity cost of gas. And within that commodity cost of gas, we allow for both fixed contracts, which are they bring security and they bring long-term security, but they're also more expensive. And that is the kind of that is a critical component to them. Is a fixed contract for a set length of time is a little bit more expensive because the person that you're buying that gas from is giving up, they're kind of locking in. And so we allow spot marketing, or we allow basically a hedge. And so they, the utilities will lock in, say, 50% of that commodity cost of gas with a hedge, and then 50% spot. And then that blended cost is what gets passed on to ratepayers. So it's not, you're trying to balance, and it's a judgment call of what you're trying to, the cost that you're trying to give to ratepayers. You want stability, you want to avoid these price spikes, but you also want to give, businesses and individuals the best of the bargain, because prices for gas is generally pretty low, and you don't want to forego that opportunity. You don't want to make people pay more than they should or than they need to. So, the hedging is, in some cases it's 50-50, in some cases it's 70-30. The utility is the one who decides, how much they're going to hedge. And then, we take a look at the Department of Commerce and us take a look at it and decide that if that seems reasonable. And, fundamentally it's a judgment call. But then it's the ratepayer gets that blended, cost of gas passed on to them.
Joe, can I just jump in?
Absolutely.
And Senator Senjum, one component of your question is, if you use less gas, you pay less, though. There is a volumetric charge. Mm-hmm. And one part of our investigation, and there was discussion in the hearing on Tuesday over this, of what alerts should the natural gas utilities have considered, or should they, sorry, I'm getting background noise here from my family. Should the natural gas utilities have notified customers of the price spike, thus indicating to Minnesotans that perhaps they would want to turn their thermostat down? So that will be included as part of our investigation.
Okay. Well, thank you, both of you. We're going to learn a lot more about our natural gas bill going forward. Representative Long.
Chair Senjum, can I add one thing, if that's okay? To further answer your question, one of the things I always try to describe it in a way to our customers is that it's two pieces of the bill. One is our rates, that where CenterPoint Energy is for delivering the natural gas, and the other part is the cost of natural gas.
Right.
And to keep us out of selling natural gas, trying to earn off the natural gas because it is a commodity, that is the reason why we do not have any markup. It is a direct pass-through. And so that is just what the customer pays.
Okay.
From our perspective, our rate is based what I call, if you look at us like the U.S. Postal Service of gas, it's the shipping and handling to bring it to the customer. And then, and the other point, I know there was some discussion about the request for the need for conserving natural gas. And one of the things I did want to add, I think that is an important thing to discuss and that we need to further, talk about the overall picture of how that works. And the challenge from the utility's perspective is that this event happened over a long weekend. And so we have to purchase that gas supply demand ahead of time. And so even with that being the case, the gas is purchased on Friday. So any conservation efforts or anything that we were able to do, you have to understand we did not have any supply issues. And we did curtail some of our customers. And even if we have asked customers to conserve, from the aspect of making sure that we have adequate supply, we have to account for that beforehand. And so we also know that the price for that gas that we had to buy prior to that weekend is not going to show up in the customer's bills way down the road. And so that's the interesting, piece to say about, or the struggle about the conservation, because even if customers were to conserve, we still had to purchase that gas at a time.
Thank you so much. Mr. Chair?
Well, it looks like we have three members with questions on the list, and that's about what we'll have time for with the time we have remaining. So we'll start with Representative Swedzinski, followed by Representative Lislegaard, and close out with Representative Stevenson. Representative Swedzinski.
Hey, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Long and Chair Senjum. Appreciate the opportunity to have this meeting. I think this is very timely. The question I really had was kind of looking at the extracurricular taxes that we have on utilities, whether it be the CASC fee on Xcel, whether it be, you know, if there's areas there where we can give relief that goes into alter accounts, and then what's left in the RDA or the RDF account, and looking at those extracurricular accounts that have cash in them that haven't been spent, so that we could use those to give some relief to ratepayers. And just that's generally my question, kind of a comment too, but I really think we should be looking at those areas as well to give some relief where we're raising taxes on the utilities, or in ways we could kind of relieve some of those and use those as pass-throughs to give back to ratepayers.
Well, I'll be happy to give you my perspective, Representative Swedzinski, which is that the renewable development account, from my perspective, was an agreement with Xcel and Prairie Island Indian Community and others about the storage of nuclear waste in Minnesota and the desire to move towards more renewable forms of energy. So I don't view that as an appropriate source for funding needs like this, but I would be happy to have further conversation. I don't know if Chair Senjum wanted to add anything.
Well, I would tend to agree with you. I'm sorry. I would tend to agree with you, but at this point in time, we just put everything on the table.
Representative Lislegaard.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Senjum. My question is, obviously, we're hearing that this is a supply and demand. We lost some of our supply, and the demand was extremely high. And we're talking about dollars, but also looking back, and there's going to be an investigation. I heard that valves froze. And so my question is where did the valves freeze? When did they freeze in the cold snap? Were they repaired? What mitigations were are in place to make sure that those valves and that access to that product is available? I would think every company, every organization has policies and procedures to take into effect the most extreme, because they have to factor in safety factors and all of these different things. So my question is, when did they freeze? When were they opened up in this whole process?
Who would like to take that?
Brad, can CenterPoint please attempt to answer that?
Mr.
Sure. This is Brad Tatungin with CenterPoint Energy. And from our perspective, we are on the end of that supply chain. And so from the suppliers and through the purchasing that we've gone through, that was the information that between what we were told from suppliers through the purchasing process, from other industry utility companies that were going through similar things. So as far as the specifics when that happened, I do not know. But I can tell you one of the challenges or issues is that it's my understanding on the production and the producing side of the natural gas wells, that is not regulated. So for us as a regulated industry, you know, we have to answer all of those questions that you described. And I'm not sure on that side of the supply chain if that is the same issue. And so that was one of the things I think certainly if we participate in a FERC investigation, that all of those things that you just described will have to be addressed and asked.
Mr. Clark.
I appreciate Brad's answer there. And just to be clear, I think from the utilities in Minnesota, these are not valves on our distribution system. These are valves that are actually on the production of natural gas in other parts of the country. I think as information becomes clearer, we'll be able to give better answers to that question, Representative, and provide that to both this committee and to the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. But as Brad said, I do believe this is an industry issue, and I think it's also a good example of some of the issues that the FERC and the federal government will need to help us as we take a look at. So just wanted to add those couple of comments and make sure it was clear that we're not talking about valves here on the system in Minnesota. We're well weatherized, and I think we'll, of course, explore lessons learned and where we can make investments to be more resilient. But we're not talking about valves on our distribution system.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to both you and Chair Senjum for having this important hearing. There was some conversation, there's been some conversation about conservation, and I would call the conversation that we've had more about short-term conservation. Like, you know, could the utility have come out and said, hey, everybody, turn down your thermostat this weekend? And I thought there was a really excellent answer about why that wasn't maybe the solution to this problem. But there's another aspect to conservation that's worth discussing, which is, you know, the operation of our conservation programs, Conservation Improvement Program, or CIP, which has been the subject of a lot of conversation in the legislature this year, both in the House and the Senate. We've had multiple hearings about the value of that program, whether it has a value, whether it should be modernized. And it occurs to me that we have just a real world example of, you know, the claim that I always make is that conservation of energy, CIP, saves consumers money. And now we have a real world example that we could take a look at, experiment, and say, how did it work? How did it perform? So my question is to CenterPoint, are you able to quantify for the committee in dollar amount how much money your ratepayers paid or saved, I should say, because of operation of the CIP program during this event?
Mr. Tetungen.
Yes, thank you, Chair Long and Committee Member Stevenson. Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And to your point, I guess the advantage of the CIP program and relative to our situation that we have here is that the benefits actually reduce the amount of demand that we would have to go out and purchase. So as it was so very well described by Commissioner Sullivan, thank you. And if you were to just go back from all the CIP savings that we reported even from 2006 moving forward, and keep in mind that some of those are continual because it's not just the one-year savings. These appliances actually, as they're operating continually to conserve the need for us buying that additional natural gas. So if you took in perspective what we were able to conserve from our CIP program, add it on to what our current demand is, that would be in the ballpark of $20 million.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, so this is really, really important. And I know that it's 5 o'clock on a Friday and everyone's looking forward to the weekend. And we've been at this for an hour and a half. And I would understand if members were starting to get a little fuzzy in the head at this point, but I just want everyone to listen to what the member just said, what he just said there, which is that existing CIP saved Minnesota and its residential consumers alone, I think, $20 million under our existing law. And You know, this legislature had the chance to pass ECO a year ago. It probably would have been even better, even a higher amount if we had actually passed ECO last year. I hope we do it this year, because there could even be even more savings. And maybe just a brief follow-up, because I think that was just residential. There was a number for commercial industrial customers, too. Is that right, Mr. Titunian?
Mr. Titunian.
From what I guess my recollection is that's somewhere in the overall ballpark of, because we're looking at what we would have to add incrementally to our gas demand. So that would include residential and commercial. But I can follow up to make sure, just because I was looking on the what was the difference that we had to add incrementally overall versus the current peak demand that we have. So I can follow up, get that information for you.
And Representative Mr. Chair. And I don't, you know, and it shouldn't, it's not pop quiz on a Friday afternoon. I don't mean to hide the ball. I did talk to your very excellent staff before the hearing. They told me $20 million on the residential side and an additional 4.6 on the small commercial industrial. So almost $25 million for one of our utilities, for one. And if you add in Xcel and Merck and everybody else, it's even more, right? So this is how conservation makes a huge difference for customers, and why it's true when I've told this committee many times, energy conservation saves money.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And to underscore your point, those were the costs incurred over basically 5 days. So that doesn't even account for all of the savings that we see year round from those conservation programs. I'll just give a couple quick remarks and then turn it over to Chair Sengem to wrap us up. I just want to thank everybody for taking their time on short notice to spend their Friday afternoon with us on this really important topic, and for everyone providing such valuable information to our two committees. This is extremely helpful. And it does appear to me that, as we've heard from several testifiers, we should at least consider the state role in trying to help alleviate these problems, both for providing flexibility for, in particular, our municipal utilities, where we know they're have fewer choices than working with the Public Utilities Commission and having some of the rate recovery approaches that are available to the PUC-regulated utilities. And then also, I think we can't forget about our lowest-income customers who really have been hammered over the past year from the pandemic and from job losses and so many other of the impacts that we've seen, who now are going to be faced with costs that could be as high as $30 or $40 a month for a year or more. That's a real burden on a family income, and particularly a low-income family. So I hope that we can take a look at that and see what we might be able to do as a state to help alleviate those pressures. Chair Sengem.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Long. I just want to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you for being with us today. This is the, I would say, the beginning of the foray into this discussion. I'm glad we were able to have it this week and be able to go home, think about this over the weekend. I am virtually sure that the legislature, House, the Senate, the Department of Commerce, and the Public Utilities Commission, as well as the involved utilities, are going to have more conversation about this. But I think we had a good start today. We'll learn more, and we'll work forward and do the right thing. So thank you so much. You want to adjourn us, Representative Long, or should I?
Sure thing, Chair Sengem. Thank you all, and we're adjourned.
Okay.